Hey, this is Rob Spee. I am the Regional Vice President of America's Channels at OutSystems and also the host of Channel Journeys podcast. I know a thing or two about building and maintaining channel partnerships. And if you want to learn how to transform your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, significantly increase your revenue and grow a scalable sales system, you should be listening to the Authentic Persuasion Show with my good friend, Jason Cutter.
Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader.
On the Authentic Persuasion Show with me today is Rob Spee. Rob is a global channel sales and marketing executive, podcaster, and advisory board member. So he is passionate about helping companies leverage partnerships to dramatically accelerate global revenue growth, which we're going to talk about. It's the first on the show, someone who's only focused on channel partnerships as a growth strategy, which I'm fascinated about. He has created and run channel strategies and programs with vendors including Aero, Carbonite, and SAS, and he's currently the RVP of America's Channels at OutSystems, and he is the host of the Channel Journeys podcast, which I love that there's such niche podcasts out there. It's awesome. So here we go. Let's have some fun. Rob, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Hey, Jason. Thank you. Great to be here.
So like I said, this is going to be fun because I have some people I talk to about channel partnerships, but never solely on this. So let's talk about that for people who might not know what that is. What does channel partnerships mean to you?
Yeah, to me, channels, it's a route to market. And so most companies go to market with a direct sales force. That's a very typical way. That's what you talk about. How do you make sales more effective through your direct sales force? But channels, actually, most of the commerce, 75% of the commerce in the world is sold through channels. So the grocery store is a channel for the manufacturer of an avocado, right? So your avocado growers sell through the channel of a grocery store. Ford, Toyota, Tesla, Tesla may sell direct, but most manufacturers sell through a channel, through a dealership. Software and hardware gets sold through the channel, and there are a wide variety of different channel partners. And that's my whole focus is what's the right channel? How do you motivate the channel? How do you build a channel and build a channel strategy to accelerate growth of your company? And my whole experience has been in the IT world.
And so what is the advantage or the logic behind a channel strategy versus direct to consumer? So let's talk about the equivalent of Ford selling through dealerships versus Tesla selling directly through their own owned dealerships.
Yeah, it's really about scale and reach. So most companies are going to get a lot more scale, meaning they can grow faster with a lower cost of overhead by leveraging channel partners who can do a variety of things. They can be selling, they can be delivering services. That's one, scale. The other is reach, that you can expand and reach more markets, more customers, maybe geographies that you couldn't reach directly with your own sales force. So those are the two key reasons why people want to have a channel strategy.
How does it help with reach? Let's say you want to get to a wider audience.
Yeah.
Why the channel partners to achieve that reach?
So one, think about geography. If you're a company and you've got, it's very easy for a domestic US company to build a direct sales force in the US and start hiring people. But if you want to start building a sales force in Latin America, let's say, and you've got different labor laws, it's a lot harder for you to go set up your own office, and it's going to be more expensive for you to go set up that office versus recruiting partners who already have entities, business entities set up in those markets. They already have relationships with customers. So there's a geographical reach. There also may be a market segmentation reach. So you may have a great sales team selling into the enterprise, but if you want to reach into the SMB market, do you want to hire all the inside sales reps or do you want to go find partners who already have reach to that market? So that's just an example of the reach you can get geographically or from a market segmentation. Also vertically, if you don't have the vertical expertise in auto manufacturing and you want to sell a product to auto manufacturing, you have expertise in insurance, but you want to find a partner who has that manufacturing expertise.
Makes sense. And part of what you said is like changing focus verticals. If you're focused on enterprise, do you want to build a SMB sales team? As I'm thinking about channel partnerships, a lot of it to me, is about understanding what you're really good at as an organization, right? Are you really good at the technical side? Like you're talking about IT. Like if you're a company that's fundamentally really good at the technical side, then there's usually this big hurdle that it takes to then build a very effective sales force, right? I see that a lot of times where a tech founder wants to have a sales team, but they're probably not writing scripts. They're probably not sure how to even hire the right people. And there's this barrier. And so I could see that where some of it is just understanding, like I'm really good at this and I'm going to stay in this lane as an organization. And then we're going to use channel partners to do what fills in the gaps of what we're not maybe the best at.
Yeah, exactly. And so you may have that scenario, or you may have the flip side where you have a great software as a solution, a SaaS product. You have a great sales team, but you may not be as strong on the technical side of the actual delivery and implementation. So you may want to hire professional service type partners and system integrators who are going to do that delivery work for you. Plus, if you think about your valuation, if you're thinking about going public for an IPO or something, they're going to take a look at what percentage of your revenue is software versus services. So you may want to offload a large portion of your service work to the channel, to the partners, so that that is not impacting your valuation.
Makes sense. And it's interesting because one of the books that I reference a lot is The E-Myth Revisited. And one of the things that I have noticed is that I pretty much look at businesses and there's three main founders, if you will, or founding principles. Usually it's a technical founded business, right? They're focused on creating that SaaS solution, if you will. There's a sales founded business where they're like, they are good at sales and it almost doesn't matter what they're selling. They just are good at sales. And then there's the marketing side where they have the marketing down and there's usually this leaning side. And from what you're talking about, it totally makes sense. Like even if you're a sales or a marketing side, you want to fill in those other gaps. And one way to do it without your own internal burden is the channel partnerships.
Yeah. And you want to use that same lens when you're picking partners too, because depending on the type of partner that you're picking, there are partners who are sales led and that's their expertise. And then there are partners who are delivery led and that's their expertise. And then there are even partners who are really strong at marketing and you may need that type of expertise. So you got to think about what's your special sauce, your skill, and then what skill do you need from the partners to complete the whole mission of selling that solution to the end customer.
Which is interesting because in my book, the first part is authenticity. And we've talked about this offline, but it's that self-awareness piece. I mean, first you got to know who you are as an organization or individual and then build the team around that. Yeah. So obviously this has been an interesting year. We're recording this kind of later in 2020. And so channel partners is, I'm sure, an interesting way to go. You were sharing right before we got started here that you're actually growing, adding all kinds of new things. So share with me and with everyone listening kind of what you're seeing, what kind of opportunities so that people can hear what's working for an organization like yours.
Yeah, there are probably several different things to talk about on that topic. One is if you take an industry perspective, certain industries are doing really well in this crisis, actually even better than before. Zoom is doing fantastic, right? We're all on Zoom. But there are also industries like travel, an airline industry, right? Hospitality, they're just getting hammered. So all of those types of different companies that are great prospects for us and our partners, some of them are not doing as well. So we've had to help our partners shift to the industries that are doing better, right? So we've been trying to educate our partners and help guide them through our marketing activities and co-marketing activities, shifting them to the markets where they're going to have more success. So that's one aspect to consider. Also, looking at the types of partners that we're working with and how we deliver our product and how our partners deliver the product. What I mean by that is COVID has shifted us all to the remote world. So it's all remote selling, right? But it's also remote delivery. All the consultants that used to go into our customer sites to deliver the projects, they're now doing it remotely. And customers are getting used to that. Now we're doing big deals 100% remote. We're doing big delivery projects 100% remote. Our partners are doing these. So that's shifting some of the work into what's called an MSP, a managed service provider. And so it's even accelerating the growth of MSPs, and that's becoming a new channel for us. And we've built a whole team to sell to MSPs and help them develop a managed service built around our product. What I mean by managed service, it's the software product and the service bundled together into one offering. And the customers are really pushing towards this. That's how they want to operate more and more. And that's the crux of any sale, right? And any channel strategy, it's customer driven. What is the customer looking for? How are they looking to engage with you and your product?
And basically meeting them where they want to be met. And I think it is fascinating as you talk about it, where it was always thought that you had to do it in person and you had to do these meetings and you had to be on site and you had to go to trade shows or conferences. And it was like this face-to-face, which nothing will replace that. But it's interesting to see organizations who thought you can only do it one way, realizing like buyers will shift. I mean, when everyone doesn't have a choice, they'll shift and then it becomes this new possibility, new option.
Yeah. One thing that we're still, I think, trying to figure out from a channel perspective, when we talked about scale and reach, one of the big benefits of that partner is that they're the often seen as like the trusted advisor of a customer and that local contact, which was built through relationships, physical relationships of being in the office, having lunch, having dinner, going golfing, right? So if that no longer exists and it's all remote, that kind of takes away that element, but you still are going to rely on partners and the scale of them being able to even virtually building relationships at a greater scale than you and your own sales force can do.
Which is fascinating because when you look at it on the surface, you're doing it all virtual, right? So your engagement with the client is virtual, your implementation is virtual, yet prior to that, upstream some was that physical face-to-face interaction that built enough trust for you to be brought in by the channel partner. So it's interesting that at some level, there's still some physical face-to-face relationship trust building that happens. And again, virtual works, but never quite the same.
No. Jason, I had lunch for the very first time in many months with a new partner of ours. And it was so nice just to sit there and talk face-to-face, you know, and have a casual conversation that you just can't replicate, as great as Zoom is.
I had that a couple weeks ago as well, for the first time since March, where I had a new potential person that wanted to work with me. And we talked on a Zoom call and then they were in town and sat down for lunch. And yeah, it was weird and interesting and natural and all of that at the same time. So one of the things we talked about, which I want to touch on before I forget, is one of your evolutions now is you've been focusing on partner enablement, sales skills, and then switching to helping your channel partners become more productive. And then also this evolution, which I think is important for people to hear, how you had things very complex and you're making things simpler now.
Yeah. So at OutSystems, we had a very successful channel for delivery, very strong delivery channel. It was doing okay from a sales perspective outside the US, but we really didn't have a sales focus. So one of the things we did this year was shift the program, really rebuilt it to have much more sales enablement. And so a big focus this year was around building business plans, joint business plans with partners, setting enablement targets. How are we going to train you for sales? How are we going to get you certified for pre-sales? So that's been the real big push. And we even built our channel manager compensation around that. So there was a sales element, but there was also an enablement element. When we built the program, we really wanted to push partners to keep increasing their skills. So the complexity that we built in the program that we're now reversing is increasing the requirements to attain certain levels of sales authorization or delivery authorization in the program. And we realized that it became a nightmare of tracking, of when do you measure, what's the time frame when they need to move up to the next level and have the second set of targets or second set of certifications. So for 21, we're going to scratch that. In fact, this is probably the first time I'm publicly saying it because we haven't announced it yet. So, but we're going to scratch
that.
We're
gonna, I won't tell anybody.
But that's fine. We're going to simplify it. It's going to be great for partners. Just going to make it much easier for them. Once they get to an authorization level, they just keep it as long as they meet those minimum requirements. When you build a program, a partner program, make it simple. Think about what are the minimum requirements that you want a partner to have that you can say to your sales rep or to your customer, I've got my stamp of approval on this guy that you can trust him. Hey, he's a new partner, he's green, but he's got that minimum requirement that you need. Then we do business planning, joint business planning to set what's the ultimate target that we're trying to achieve. That's the business target of what we want to do together for that year. And then each year you set new goals and do your business reviews. So that's why we're simplifying the program. And we're shifting to, because the goal was all around enablement this year, we built into our channel manager compensation an enablement component. So our channel managers had targets on partner enablement. I think next year we're going to move, probably don't need that as much, if at all. And it's going to be much more of a revenue target around the partner business itself and how much partner involvement we have and how much business the partners are generating. And that's just an evolution. As you mature, as your channel program matures, you want to keep iterating on it.
And I love that evolution because I've seen that with so many organizations that I've been in or worked with, where in the beginning, you don't really know what's going on. And so you have this very loose framework. You have some main goals, let's say revenue, close more deals, right? For any sales group. And then what happens over time, then more rules get piled on. Some of it is to help with the framework and direction. Some of it is to control and contain activities and make sure people are doing the right thing and none of the wrong things. And then there's always this evolution where it gets to a point where it's like, okay, now it's become so bureaucratic. There's so many rules. There's too many guardrails. Where literally now we're all trapped in the corner because we're fenced in by guardrails. And so you blow those out, trusting that you have the right people on board and they know what to do. And you want to enable them to just go do it.
Yeah. It's really critical in the partner world that what you're describing, because you've got to keep it simple. And when the partners are looking at which vendors do they want to work with, they want to work with the vendors who are going to pay them well, that it's going to work within their business model. So it's lucrative to them and helping them grow their business, but you got to be easy to work with too. And so if you build this super complex program, just a nightmare to work with you, they're going to go on to the other vendor, even if that other vendor has inferior product.
Yeah. And that's always the way things will go, is if your comp plan or whatever that is too complex, where especially salespeople of any level can't easily figure out what they should be getting paid on a potential deal, then you've made it too complex and it's not going to work long term.
Yeah.
You should easily know, how do I win? What will I get when I win? Okay, now let me go play and win.
Yeah. And one thing you've got to think about when you're building out your channel program, if you don't have one or you have one and you're not seeing success, make sure that it's comp neutral to your reps. And that means that your rep's going to get the same payment, same quota attainment, whether it goes through that partner or not. Otherwise, there's going to be an incentive for them to take the deal direct, and you're never going to get the momentum with the partner channel. So at least at the beginning, you've got to have that comp neutrality to get the ball rolling. And you've got to be investing in the channel, investing in your partners, and make sure your reps are invested in it as well.
And to clarify, when you say reps, you mean your internal sales reps who are selling to potentially the same target customers that your channel partners would be calling, right? So they're contacting ABC Tech Corp, and a channel partner could also be targeting that. And you want to make sure that there's no favoritism, no bias. And I see that all the time, where a comp plan will incentivize somebody to go left, and the company's like, why don't you ever go right? And it's like, because I make more money going left. So why would I ever do that?
That's right. The partner's to the right, he's going to keep going left to the direct sale. And you've got to have that mentality of working together with the partners. Some people think, I'm going to build a channel and I'm going to have these channel partners to selling to all these customers over on the right side, and my direct guys will be selling on the left. But that's not the way it works, because the channel partner never has a chance to get successful because he doesn't get to see you in motion. How your reps succeed, and they got to be selling together at least for some time before they get off the training wheels and go out and sell your product the way you sell it and do it successfully.
Makes sense. What should all salespeople be doing daily, whether your internal ones, your channel partners, whatever that looks like, to become more successful?
I think one of the most important areas is, once you have built up that channel and you've got your internal sellers, you've got your partner sellers, is just having that daily engagement. Our most successful sellers are the ones who have built relationships with partners, and they have their two or three go-to partners that they work with on almost every deal. And they are talking, well, at least every day, sometimes more than once a day. They're talking about the deals, the existing customers, the projects that are going on. And they've just built a really strong relationship. The less successful sellers haven't done that. They don't have that abundance mindset of thinking, hey, when I build this team and I work with these partners and just include them in part of my team, and we're constantly collaborating, they're trying to kind of keep it all to themselves and very protective, and only sharing certain bits of information with partners, or only talking to them on a 2-week cadence call or once a month. That you can never build the momentum doing it that way. In some way, you think of them as an employee, but you really got to think of them more as a customer. Right? And you wouldn't think, if you're doing a direct sale, you're not going to try to call your customer and not build a relationship. You only talk to them once a month, maybe, right? Right. That's probably not going to work. So you got to think about your partners the same way.
Yeah. And in terms of like a customer, which if I were to call a potential customer every day, that's just creepy and weird and could be a little desperate long term. So depending on what you're used to, it's either that framework or if you're a manager. So now all of a sudden, your internal salespeople who have channel partners are now a manager and a leader of that, where a sales manager isn't going to talk to their sales reps once every 2 weeks and hope that they're successful in between, right?
Right.
They're going to have a relationship, be touching base, what's working, what's not working, how can I support you? Like servant leadership, right?
Yeah.
And so what you're talking about is that same framework where they might not be an employee. Obviously, their 1099 channel partner commission relationship. And how do you support them to win like they were sitting next to you on the team?
Yeah, that's a great analogy, that sales manager or team manager approach. And when you have a new member on your team, you take them under your wing and you're spending more time with them, right? And then over time, you get to know each other. And then maybe it's gone down from daily communication to a couple times a week. And you guys can almost complete each other's sentences, right? But it evolves over time.
Beyond like just the daily interactions, what are you seeing as one of the most important traits for successful salespeople? Traits, personality, mindset. What have you found over the years of doing this for as long as you have?
Well, I'll bring up two individuals. So you mentioned the salesperson. There's the salesperson, your own inside or direct sales, field salesperson who's working with the partners. But then you also have your channel manager. And at OutSystems, we call them RCMs, regional channel managers. Some people call them CAMs, channel account managers, PAMs. They have a lot of different names, right? But it's a very different mentality, a very different personality of who's successful in those two roles. And the partner manager is more like a general manager. And he's got so many different responsibilities of recruiting new partners, enabling and onboarding partners, doing business planning, driving that engagement between the partner and the sales rep. That's a totally different mentality, and it's a very combination of strategic and tactical role versus the sales rep, who is very focused, understands the sales process and what a winning sales process, and is repeating that, right, over and over. So I think the sales rep that is super successful working with the partner is able to build that partner motion into their process, and it just becomes part of their winning sales process. And the partner understands his process as well so that they can speak the same language.
Got it. Makes total sense. So shifting a little bit, what does it mean to you to be authentic? And because you're in a unique space that I find fascinating, where does authenticity fit into success in the game of channel partnerships?
Oh, it's so important. To me, being authentic is just being straightforward and upfront with your partners. When you're meeting with partners and you're discussing the opportunity, you just got to lay it out and what makes a good partner, what doesn't. And just being upfront about it, right? That's so important in any relationship because partnerships are built on a relationship, which is built on trust. And if you're not authentic, you're not going to be able to build that trust with the partner, and then the relationship is not going to work. And it's also having that authenticity internally too, so that you're setting the right expectations of what your partners can do for the company, for the sales rep, for the professional services organization. That is just so critical. And for me, the most critical aspect of being successful in this business is alignment, internal alignment on the mission from the CEO and board all the way down to the people in the field executing, but also alignment with your partners and making sure that you're aligning to their business model and that your program aligns to their business model. Because if there's not a match there, you might build great trust, but if there's a misalignment in business models, then it's not going to work either.
Where has persuasion fit into your success or play a part in what you're doing each day?
Persuasion is probably one of the biggest things that you need to have in the channel as a channel manager or channel chief, because you've got to persuade people internally why you need a channel. We started out this whole podcast talking about why a channel in the first place.
Right.
And many CEOs, sales leaders, venture capitalists may not understand the power of the channel. And so you've got to lay it out for them and persuade them that this makes sense, that this just having a channel in the first place. And then it's a constant sales and persuasion job ongoing because you're introducing new things, new types of partners, and you're constantly having to persuade people internally why that makes sense. And there's a good justification for it. Externally to the partners, you've got to persuade them that you as a vendor are the right choice. They've got a lot of different choices of how they're going to grow their business. They may go with your competitors. They may go with a totally different line of technology. So you've got to persuade them and have a really strong value proposition for them of why they should be a partner of your company.
So if you could give them advice, those company CEOs, executives who either struggling with or don't understand, but you know it would be a good fit, because it's not a good fit for everybody, right? The channel partner.
Yeah.
For the one that's a good fit that they just don't seem to understand, what's the piece of advice you would give them to help with what's holding them back?
Yeah, I think first understand what is it that you're trying to accomplish. Get alignment on the goals and then discuss how a channel and the right channel strategy could help you achieve those goals maybe faster, or maybe even achieve it better, get even to a higher growth rate, depending on what the goal is. It might be a revenue goal. It might be a customer satisfaction goal, market penetration goal, whatever it is. I want to understand the goals first and then talk about how a channel strategy, what the channel strategy would look like and how that could help them accomplish it in a more efficient, more effective fashion.
Got it. Makes sense. All right, let's shift completely another different direction here. What did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, I initially went to school, to college, to be an architect.
Interesting. And then what happened in that journey?
I'm the youngest of six kids. One of my older brothers, who was already out of college and was working in construction, brought me to lunch with a starving architect. And after lunch, he goes, "Rob, this is going to be you." And then he showed me this article. At the time, the highest paid people coming out of college were petroleum engineers. So the next year, I shifted my major, became a petroleum engineer.
And then what happened? Did you use that?
I did. And my first job was out on the oil rigs. I was a drilling engineer working in the Gulf of Mexico. The price of oil collapsed and they pulled me off the rig and put me into an oil trading position. And I went from working on these rigs with roughnecks, missing teeth and fingers, to flying first class to Geneva and Paris and London. And I said, I think the business world is for me.
That's amazing. Are you happy that your brother did that intervention with his best intentions in mind, I'm guessing?
I am. I actually am. Yeah. I think my career path, I'm much happier with the way I went. I think probably would have gone a little stir crazy being an architect. I'd love the variety of what I've ended up doing and the international travel. That's why I chose, it wasn't just the money for oil. I also read about all the international opportunities and I really wanted to go travel and live overseas.
Yeah. And it's interesting because if we obviously don't have a crystal ball or a time machine, but I have a feeling, because life is interesting, I just have this strong feeling with you that if you had gone into being an architect, something would have happened that then would have led to something else, which would have led to this similar type of path.
Yeah.
Just like it did. So I think that's fascinating. What is your personal definition of success?
Oh, man. I'm less driven financially, which is probably why I'm not in sales. And I'm just more about enjoying what I do. For me, I want to succeed. I set lofty goals when I come into an organization and I really want to achieve them. But I want to make sure that I'm enjoying what I'm doing and my team's enjoying it, that we're having fun while we're being super successful.
Got it. Love it. Last question, the journey or the destination?
Channel journeys. It's all about the journey. Yeah. I love boating. And so if you're a power boater or a sailboater, it's the exact same question, because power boaters are about the destination. They want to get to wherever they're going fast. But sailing, it's about the journey, because you can't be in a hurry. And I'm a sailor.
It's interesting because I'm a power boat person where it's like, okay, where are we going and how fast can we get there?
Yes, exactly.
And I think in my life, as I've kind of evolved and or matured, I don't know if I wouldn't use that word about myself, but you know, let's say evolved, being more on the sailing side and just kind of enjoying it. But
I don't know if I haven't taken and done any analytics on it, but I've done a lot of sailing with partners.
Okay.
I wonder if the channel partners tend to be more about the journey than the destination. I don't know. I'll have to do a survey.
Interesting. Well, and then it's funny because you talked about golf earlier, and I will say for golf, for me, it's the journey, not the destination, because my destination in golf sucks. And so it's not fun. I don't even want to count the score. It's the journey and just having fun and just taking that pressure off. So it's interesting. My golf game is about the journey. My boating focus is on the destination.
Yeah, I have a lot of funny golf stories. I've switched to biking.
There you go. Even better. Rob, thanks for being on the show. I appreciate this again. I love the concept of the channel partnership. I work with some on both sides as a consultant. I have ones that I represent. They have vendors for my clients that could help them. And then obviously I have people who refer me business. So I love this model. I think it's great if it's a good fit. So as I mentioned earlier, you have a podcast. So it's the Channel Journeys podcast. I know that you have that on your site, thechanneljourneys.com. /category/podcast. Where else can people find the podcast?
Well, it's on iTunes, Stitcher. I think just about every platform you can probably find it, I would hope. It seems to be out there just about everywhere in places I didn't even know it was. Yeah. Or just go to channeljourneys.com or just find me on LinkedIn.
Perfect. So LinkedIn, you're also on Twitter at Channel Journeys. Got the Channel Journey site. Thanks again for being on here and sharing. I'll put all those links in the show notes. And I appreciate you sharing this wisdom.
Likewise. Thank you, Jason. Great questions.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.